Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013.
A good year.
Oh, absolutely.
Any year is a good year.
Compared to this year.
Fucking 2020.
Yes, 2013. So, in any case, my name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Now, Billy Crash.
Yes. And tonight, we are going to discuss literary personality. I don't know how you would call it. She's an author, of course, or she was an author. She passed on, but her work lives on, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that is Shirley Jackson.
Ow!
Yes. And, yeah, I was talking to Billy before the show, and I know we touched on her, the recent film version, the recent film that they made about her, on our Corona Coping episode. But, yeah, the saying to Billy, I saw a brief biographical blurb on the back of a book I have of hers, and I thought maybe I would read it, and maybe, Bill, if you have anything to add to it or any comments to make on it, we can maybe go from there.
I usually do, so let's do it.
because the two of us are coming from kind of different angles with our familiarity with her work and her life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Shirley Jackson was born in San Francisco in 1916, though she often gave the date as 1919, and spent most of her early life in California. She attended Syracuse University, where she met fellow student and future critic and teacher Stanley Edgar Hyman. They married in 1940 in New York City and moved to Bennington, Vermont, 5 years later. The mother of four children, Jackson was at once the perfect professor's wife, a successful writer, an engaging conversationalist, an energetic hostess, and a troubled woman, addicted to drinking, smoking, amphetamines, and chocolate. Afflicted by weight and health problems, in later years she was increasingly afraid to leave her house. Jackson died of heart failure in 1965 at the age of 48. She is the subject of a biography, Private Demons, by Judy Oppenheimer. And I think this is a little interesting, Bill, because I'm not used to this sort of candid, even though it's just a paragraph, it's kind of a candid bit of biography in just a brief
bit
of summary here. And I'm kind of surprised at how it's not just going through the basic highlights, if you know what I mean.
No, I know, and I think a lot of that has to do with how she was perceived by the public early on. Not even that, even after her death, and she passed on in August 1965, August 8th to be exact, a month after I was born. Her husband was really upset that, you know, she wasn't well received enough by the world. You know, they were both, you know, English-based people. You know, he was a literary critic. He really looked out for her. He also did control her money. And at one point she was making far more than he was. Then again, he was a college professor, so, you know, he was a loser. That's a joke. I'm saying that because I used to be one, so I know the money wasn't there. But, you know, he was just upset that, you know, she wasn't regarded, you know, well enough. I mean, her last novel published was We've Always Lived in the Castle from 1962, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And that was considered one of the top, you know, novels of the year. She didn't finish her last one that she'd been working on. And he put that in a collection with short stories. She has over 200 short stories. I mean, she was very prolific. She was prolific. And, you know, she just did so much in the mystery, gothic, and horror veins. It was interesting. Like, I was looking up, like, you know, trying to find quotes from her. And everybody was just quoting the books. It's like, what? She wasn't a person? She didn't speak? This woman went to colleges. She did speaking engagements. She wrote mm-hmm. papers. She wrote things on what writers can use to their benefit, what they should look out for. So it's actually been difficult for me to find quotes about her musings on life and everything else, because it's all like, well, we've always lived in a castle. It's like, I read the fucking book. I don't need a quote from it. Like, what? She had nothing else to offer? And I don't know if it's like she fell into that weird time zone in the 40s, 50s, and 60s can you name me a bunch of, female authors from that time?
Well, I was going to say, Bill, mm-hmm. it's like at that time, I think the role of the female in society was still something. It was before the women's movement. And, so I think there was still that sense of women being shunted aside or not being taken as seriously just on the basis of gender, mm-hmm. even if you were a brilliant writer like she was. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there was a push-pull effect. I mean, from the teens, she said, mm-hmm. She'd lied that she was born in 1919. During World War I, in the United States, as in other countries, when the men went off to war, the women went into the factories and they started doing manly work. And, right. They helped keep the war effort going. So after that, it's funny, after World War I, then you have the Jazz Age in the United States. Then you have women smoking in public, drinking, flappers, makeup, not wearing like practically burkas, which if you look at any old photographs up to like the early 1900s, women were like, clothed from head to toe, So that really started to change. Then you had the Depression and everything was just bad. And then World War II, women are back in the factories again. Not only that, this is so important, so vital for the survival of the world against the tyranny of Hitler and Imperial Japan and Italy at the time, that women were, at least in this country, even though they didn't see combat, women were flying planes, they were serving it on the ocean, they were doing their part. I mean, the crew that trained the team to drop the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the team that trained them were women, okay? Which a lot of people don't know about. So, like, after the 40s, after World War II, these women are displaced again. Or like, but I was just doing this great job, and you just gave it to this guy who came back, and, like, what about me? So that, all those things were in there. And I think from what I've read about her and what I've seen about her, I think she had those rumblings inside her, too. Like, this is not right. Mm-hmm. And she was pissed. And I think that's part of the reason why she wrote, her favorite story, The Lottery.
Yeah. And what do you think about The Lottery, Bill?
It's funny. We read it in school when we were kids. I don't know if you could do that now because of stupid helicopter parents. And if you are a helicopter parent, you are stupid and you're an asshole.
Yes.
You really are. And you're fucking everything up by not letting your kid run free. So with that aside, I read that early on when I was a kid, and we read it in class, and I'm like, I did curse at the time, but I'm in my head, I'm like, holy shit, And she was making great commentary on, traditionalism for tradition's sake, which is a very, very bad thing to do. It's mm-hmm. a logical fallacy.
We've always done it this way, so we got to keep doing it.
Absolutely, man. You got it. Hit the nail on the head. And plus, she's mocking where, she was living in North Bennington, Vermont, where she didn't really fit in because of what she did. She wasn't like a regular woman, so she had issues with those people. She pretty much said, I'm writing a damn story about you, you sons of bitches. And, she pretty much did. Like, you will follow mindlessly. This totally fits perfectly today, mm-hmm. You'll follow mindlessly. You'll pick a scapegoat, just so you could get on with your happy little lives, your happy little pretty town, which is great, which is what she did. She took this ancient ritual. She brought it up to modern times, and everybody has, it's picture perfect, sunshiny, Mayberry type of environment. And they're doing this horrific lottery. That's just, and look what they're doing, indoctrinating the kids. Oh, get up there. Get up there, kid. Yeah, you're the man of family now. Get up there. Yeah, you know, pick a tile. And it's like,
yeah.
And this is exactly what we do. You know, that's America, and that's America right now, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, something
prophetic.
Oh, yeah.
But prophetic. Actually not prophetic. It just never changed. It's like watching a Twilight Zone episode, and you're like, wow, they're talking about social issues we still have trouble with today. That's a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. On one hand, it's like, man, Rod Serling and Shirley Jackson were really prophetic. And then I'm like, oh, no, this stuff's been around for it's been around forever.
Ever.
Unfortunately, and we don't learn, which is why it's like one thing to watch Twilight Zone or read Shirley Jackson and be taken aback by the brilliance of the writing or the execution, so to speak. But then it's like, oh God, it's so frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, also looking at today, I mean, the revolutions that began in Egypt, whether you agreed with how they went or not, started from people texting each other, you know, and now look what we have. I mean, social media, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible how people can connect. And how young people are like, they don't have to listen to anybody. They could find their own truths, and they're looking at stuff. They're checking patterns. I mean, they punked the president.
Yeah, that's
true. They bought tickets for his stupid fucking bullshit, third-rate, fascist, Nazi, piece-of-shit, scumbag party, and they didn't show up. And they did it because they knew, the money's not really going to matter in this sense. But we just – they told the president, fuck you. It was beautiful. Yeah, it was kids who did it. Kids
bought up tickets for seats that never got filled.
Yep. Never got filled, and that's fantastic. And who knows how many lives they saved by doing that?
True.
Very true. COVID-19, you know. So I think, you know, it's just different with communication and everything else. You can't hide people from a negative reality anymore. You can't just say, "Oh no, it's okay to do it this way." When there's 8 million channels, the internet, global everything, you know, you have to look at stuff. That's not right. Some people don't. Some people don't. But I think in general, people are like, okay, something's wrong here. You know, so. Yeah.
Well, I think even if you're not going to the extremes that the K-pop people are, you know, in buying up the tickets, you know, even just having that platform of Twitter or Facebook, granted, it's very easy to be the lunatic screaming in the town square, and, you know, but at the same time, there's also a lot of people who are expressing things very they're using the platform to spread good information, like useful information, I think, that doesn't it's not party particular, just like you should do. This is like this is the guidance coming out to protect you and to protect your neighbor kind of thing. You know, that's not, to me, that's not a partisan thing. That's more like just thinking. That's being smart. That's being conscientious.
Agreed.
So I think, you know, it's just, you got to kind of know where to look, because you can easily sort of fall down a Freudian slip of conspiracy theories and bullshit, you know. So
Beware the Rabbit Troll, the new horror film from Greg Palko, with Palko Designs. Yeah, it's the Rabbit Troll, man. He listens to metal and he's going to fuck you up.
Oh, I saw that Rabbit Troll movie. It fucking sucked.
But anyway,
I wanted to spoon my eyes out. Yeah.
But the thing with Shirley Jackson during her time, I mean, they always call the 50s in the United States the happy days. Yeah, it was happy if you were white, Christian, male, heterosexual. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's it. You know, everybody else wasn't, you know. It wasn't really a fun time for a lot of people. And it wasn't fun if you were a woman and trying to, like, hey, man, I had these freedoms during World War II that I don't have. I have to play a role now. I have to put on my little gloves, wear my pancake hat, and I'm not saying that was the norm all the time, but, you know, so, you know, Shirley Jackson, you know, knowing how she became agoraphobic a little bit, she was actually, the last year of her life, they said she was getting better. It's just sad with the drugs and stuff that she was taking, the addiction to amphetamines and whatnot, you know, arteriosclerosis she had and everything else, but, you know, so she was, like, taking shots. And I think Elizabeth Moss really represented her very well in the movie Shirley. First of all, Elizabeth Moss is a great actress.
Oh, absolutely.
She's wonderful. She got a little frumpy for the role. You know, they didn't like, I don't think they put her in a super giant, you know, big suit or anything like that. Cause this was, the movie took place about 15 years before, like, you know, she met her demise. But, but like Elizabeth Moss always had this little like wry smile and she'd have these little snappy remarks. And from everything I've read about Shirley Jackson, I could see her doing that, like taking pot shots where she could and people politely going, because she was Shirley Jackson and she did The Lottery and The Haunting of Hill House was a great book that was well received. She's an author, so she could be a little eccentric and all. So she could get away with those little barbs. And luckily she had a husband that really did support her and loved her. And stayed with her till the end. So that was great. But, you know, she didn't have, like, a major outlet. And it's great, though. I love the whole elements. I love the allegories. I love the thematic tones. Like, today someone might write that story, and it might just be straight up blatant. And it's like there's no subtlety at all. And
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
You're talking about The Lottery, Bill?
Yeah. Course.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I was going to ask you what your first exposure to Miss Jackson was, and I'm guessing The Lottery in school was the first exposure for you.
Yeah, it was. I was picking my nose until I was like 40. But anyway, it was like years later, you know, I saw The Haunting of Hill House and I'm like, holy crap, this is one of the greatest horror movies ever made based on Shirley Jackson's book. You know, it was called The Haunting and Haunting in 1963. So then I backtracked and I got the book and I was like, oh my gosh, this is one of the rare times where the movie fully complements the book extremely well. The acting, everything that was set in the film, it's totally extracted from the novel. And it's really a beautiful combination, the two. And that's when I realized, because I hate horror novels. I hate them. Yeah. They're boring to me. I'm a visual guy. I can't, like, they're boring. It just doesn't work. But Shirley Jackson, she works on me, just like Max Brooks and World War Z is working on me. She has this something. And in this case, for her, you know, she goes deeper because it's all internal horror. Mm-hmm. You know, she does this with all of her characters where it's like, okay, something's not right and I'm in this person's head. And it's not a really good place to be, you know. We always lived in the castle, which is again another wonderful book. You know, I give The Haunting of Hill House that edge, but not by much. And she just did this great job of capturing, of getting deep and not being afraid to expose the dirt, or not afraid to take a shovel full of dirt, flip it over, and let's see what's there. Excuse me, and she did it in not necessarily subtle ways, but she wasn't overbearing either. You know, she just laid it out, and you know, you absorb it, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Bill. Because I'll be honest with you, and I think I told you this on our Corona show when you started talking about the movie. I was like, I haven't read any Shirley Jackson, and I had seen The Haunting.
I cried all night, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, you know what happened was I finished the thing I was reading and I was like, I said, I had like three volumes of Shirley Jackson on my shelf that I was just waiting to get for an excuse to get around to reading. This became the excuse. So I started reading this volume of short stories by her and I literally found myself, and I'm not just saying this for the purposes of this show because there's no one out there who's going to care about me saying this.
I care, you know, Johnny. Because,
well, Miss Jackson is obviously no longer with us. I mean, but it's just, I started reading and I'm just like, oh, she is good. She is putting her hooks in me in a big way.
Mm.
And I was just like, I say this as the hugest compliment is when someone can write in such a way that I just want to keep flipping the pages and I just want to keep going and going and going, that's when you're obviously in the hands of a good author, someone who really knows their craft and knows what they're doing. And I went through probably like a half dozen of her short stories the first night I started reading this book. I was just telling myself, oh, just one more. Oh, this one's done with. Oh, I just got to go through another one because there were just so freaking good. And they just really hit. So this was just a couple days ago that I started reading Shirley Jackson.
Nice.
And I'm so glad I did, because and there's certain recurring motifs and themes in her work, Bill, in addition to the stuff that you've already brought up, that just really resonate with me and I guess my personality, because something she is extremely good at is just these weird senses of not knowing information, of information being missing for the protagonist. So it's like they only have a partial picture of what's happening, and they're relying on strangers or neighbors to give them information or fill in pieces of the story, but the neighbors aren't reliable. And I feel like there's this paranoia oftentimes running through her stories, and maybe this goes into her kind of becoming agoraphobic at a point in her life, because there is this weird kind of reservation and skepticism toward the outside world. I think it's like her characters are like in the world, but they're afraid of the world at the same time, I think.
Yeah.
And what it could, you know, the notion that the world is a cold, cruel place and how's it going to hit you back, kind of, you know, when's the shoe going to drop? And I think she does that really well.
I mean,
what do you think of that, Bill?
No, I agree with you. I haven't read, it's funny, I read novels, you're reading a short story. She only had 6 novels, so I've already read like 33% of her novelizations. It's funny because as you're talking, it's like, yeah, that's what she does. So, you know, she did have this particular style where, you know, she like you said, you know, she draws you in, she gets her hooks in you, and she doesn't, you know, give up the ghost. She doesn't like give everything on a silver platter. You know, if her characters are in the dark, so are you. And I was thinking, holy crap, man, it's what she really did so well. And We've Always Lived in a Castle, you know.
Yeah, can you give some more details on that, Bill, without giving the ghost away, or is that a bit hard?
It's about two sisters.
It's about two sisters.
Yeah, it's about a family that has a particular reputation in this particular town, and it's one of those, as you read it, it's just so interesting how she paints this character, and I could see now maybe that's a young Shirley Jackson. And then when you get to the ending, it's like, oh my God, you know, it's like, damn. And she just has this way of keeping you interested, because I don't know if I could find the actual quote of hers, but because most of these quotes are just friggin' about her, from her books, but I remember her saying something about talking about the dull bits of writing and how to make them work for you. And there's no dull bits in her writing.
Oh no.
There's like nothing's happening and you're still fully invested. There's still something being revealed, being divulged, being released. And that's really just so beautiful. But I think, like she said in the novel, The Haunting of Hill House, no live organism can continue for long to exist sanely under conditions of absolute reality. And
wow.
Yeah. And I think, and that's really like overquoted for her, but I think that is her. And that is her saying, this is my life, man, in that one friggin' line. And that's what she like endured, you know, playing the professor's wife, being the author, but, you know, and even though she was a popular author, like, you know, she's a woman, you know, kind of thing, but.
Yeah, and I think that's a good summation, Bill, that quote, because I do get that feeling as I work through her short fiction that, you know, I'm trying to think, are some of these characters surrogates for her and just her perception of other people and the world, and kind of, sort of like you said, the shovel full of dirt and what's in the shovel full of dirt kind of thing, you know, cause I know, you know, writing's this solitary process, and especially if you're not predisposed towards sort of social mores to begin with, I think, and being sociable, which, you know, that I'm gathering wasn't really her forte. You know, I can see some of that personality coming through, because a lot of her short fiction does sort of revolve around like mothers, you know, sort of the mundane tasks of, you know, a housewife, you know, who hangs around just making meals, taking care of the kids, taking care of the husband before he goes off to work. And then some weird circumstance befalls her, and and I'll bring up probably one of the most disturbing stories I've read so far is called The Renegade. And it's basically, you know, the catalyst for the story is she sends her husband and kids out for the day. The kids got to go to school. The husband's got to go to work. She's made breakfast. She gets a phone call from a distant neighbor who's accusing her dog of having killed their chickens. So what ensues is basically she's like, well, she goes through this plethora of emotion like, oh, it couldn't be my dog. But if it is my dog, I got to find out, kind of. Mm-hmm. The dog's not around. She's got to locate the dog. And so she starts to progressively walk through this small town, and she's talking to various people. She's talking to a guy at the butcher shop and a guy who's hanging out at the butcher shop. And everybody is saying these awful macabre things to her about, well, you know, once a dog kills a chicken, there's no going back. And everybody's like, you're going to kill the dog? You're going to shoot the dog? That's like everybody's saying these things to her, and there's no consolation. And everybody, and I've seen this in some of her other stories too, people have this weird sort of grin and snicker about them, kind of, you know, that's like, oh, isn't this the most funny thing? You know, the suggestion of having to have your dog put down. You know, and she's like, oh, and the character's like, oh, isn't there any way to rehabilitate him? And she's kind of caught in this tug of war between totally losing her shit and trying to maintain this facade of sociability toward and neighborliness, which is crazy, I think. And eventually it leads to this very, I would almost call the end of the story darkly comedic, but it's just absolutely horrifying to me how the story ends. And I was just like, it really got to me, especially because it draws these things into question. Like this character, it's a short story, but she's gone on this odyssey in a sense to get to this point. And then you question whether she's still sane at the end because of the way things are happening around her. And it's just very ingenious, I think, because when someone can make you feel like you're going crazy along with the main character, again, that's a sign that the artist is doing their job really well, I think.
Nice. No, I agree with you. And, you know, I think this is what she says about what she writes, and you let me know.
Sure.
Shirley Jackson said, I've always loved to use fear to take it and comprehend it and make it work and consolidate a situation where I was afraid and take it whole and work from there.
Wow.
You know, she wanted to get into the bits of it. And this is something akin to what Stephen King had said. Stephen King said, you know, I write about my fears. He's very multiphobic. You know, but she, Shirley Jackson, who was an inspiration for King, as well as Neil Gaiman, as well as Richard Matheson, we were just talking about the Twilight Zone before.
Oh yeah.
She said, I delight in what I fear. And I think that, you know, and you know, from reading her books and like she's taking these moments, and it's funny because she's not stretching it out. She's stretching out the pain. She's stretching out the fear element, the suspense element, without it sagging in the middle, like so many other, you know, horror-based thriller stories that we watch. It's like, oh, here's the lull. Wake me up when it picks up again. She doesn't have those. She just doesn't.
Yeah, Bill. And
it's
like
a simmering, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Even though, yeah, you're coming from the novels and I'm coming from the short stories. But even with a short story, I think you can – people can mess up short stories too, you know.
Oh, they're so easy to screw up. That's the problem.
Well, and that's another thing that makes it seem so much more awesome to me, due to a lack of a better word, that her short stories are just so, they're really streamlined, but she's really streamlined, but there's no fat on them. You know, everything feels essential in them, you know, building up towards wherever it's going to build to, whether it's 4 pages or 20, 30 pages of a short story. And that's really impressive to me, when someone can really invest, you can really invest in the sense of atmosphere and creation. She really uses description in a way that, you know, Richard Matheson does. You know, it's really vivid. You really get a sense of place and a sense of these characters, you know, even just for the brief periods we're following them. It's just these, it's like we, like we were saying earlier in the show about the Twilight Zone and Miss Jackson's work. It's just like this stuff has a timeless feel because it taps into this stuff that's been around for so long.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something I'm responding to with her short stories is, and I'll say maybe this is why I like her stuff so much. You know, the movie, The Tenant, Bill?
Yes. Yes, yes. Polanski film?
Yep, yep.
Love, love, love it.
Which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Good choice.
And part of the reason I love that movie is because it creates such a sense of unease in me, actually. Because I've had the feelings that the main character in that movie has, you know, just like, well, you know, what are your neighbors? Who are your neighbors? What are their motives? You know, what... how can you trust your neighbors? And I feel like on top of that, you know, I moved recently and we're living in a house in a suburban neighborhood. So I'm always kind of questioning, you know, there's always these weird thoughts in the back of my head about the neighbors, just these natural human kind of, I'm like, is it just my personality? Am I just paranoid? Am I reading too much into stuff? And that's something that Polanski did with The Tenant, and that's something Jackson does really well.
Rear Window, starring Johnny Numb as himself.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the story.
I think
of my
I
life.
Saw a crime. Yeah, you probably did. Oh shit, we gotta get out of here. Sorry.
Just call me codename Karen. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
But I think that's, like I said, Bill, I think that's something that resonates with me with the. Jackson is like the Tenant, you know, the way that movie opens, it sets a mood right from the first 2 minutes when Polanski's character inquires about the apartment and Shelley Winters is the concierge and she basically looks at him and like pulls the blind down in front of him. And that's like, you don't know what's going on. It's like, oh, she's awfully cold and standoffish. And then she shows him around and it just gets more and more strange and awkward as she's just casually recounting the person in the apartment, the vacant apartment, who just, oh, she just threw herself out a window. And it's like Shelley Winters is laughing like one of the characters in a Shirley Jackson story. It's that weird impish kind of gallows humor, but it's not funny. It's very disorienting. It's very awkward. Yeah. It's very sinister in a way. So,
well, you know, one of the things, like, you know, looking up these quotes by Jackson, they're all fear-based. It's like, this is something that she was exploring, trying to understand, trying to cope with probably. But one of the quotes that I think is really interesting and really internal is, she said, "I think we are only afraid of ourselves, of seeing ourselves clearly and without disguise." And I'm like, man, that's pretty heavy. So, so I'm like, and then I'm like looking, and it was right next to a quote from We've Always Lived in a Castle, where the one woman, Marikat, says, and I, when I read it, I was like, yeah, I remember that line. It was pretty potent. "I can't help it when people are frightened," says Marikat. "I always want to frighten them more." And it's like, you know, she's like a, she's a goth chick out of time. You know, like with some of the goth people I grew up with and all, it's like, yeah, man, the world's black. I want to paint my room black. Yeah. And when it's painted black, I want to paint it black on top of that. I remember those days. And I'm like, where was Shirley Jackson, man? We should have all been reading her in like a room, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, she, absolutely. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Ah, it's just, and, you know, and even like other people and suspicions. It's really interesting because where is it? It's funny as hell. I suppose this is what Shirley Jackson said. I suppose the mothers of most 12-year-old boys live with the uneasy conviction that their sons are embarked upon a secret life of crime. But she said her, I don't know if it was a book. I don't know if it was one of her novels or a short story, but she said, "Life Among the Savages is a disrespectful memoir of my children." Like, damn. And she didn't hold punches. And I really think Elizabeth Moss did a research for the book. And I think the screenwriter did a great job too. I mean, for the movie Shirley. I almost want to see Shirley too. Like, I want to see something else with Elizabeth Moss in it, and bring back the cast. Let's see what happens.
Well, Bill, you know, that's an interesting quote, because a couple of the short stories I've read by her feature children kind of prominently, and the children are usually like purveyors of the sinister, sometimes the menace of what's bothering the adults in the book is, you know, contingent on children. And oftentimes the children are the ones who are exerting control over the adults in a way. So I think we also have some of that today, in certain ways, at least when I see how parents interact or don't interact with their kids.
Yeah, but I mean,
or how it's like, your kid is awful, I'm just gonna buy him more tech stuff or something like that, you know, to calm him down for 5 minutes. Yeah.
No, I know what you're saying, but it's just like the way she looked at the world and the way she made it. Like, she'll look at something and take the mundane out of it. She'll take everything out of it. Oh, look at that small, you know, smiling child, and she'll like create something else, because. Mm-hmm. Because she even said, "We eat the year away. We eat the spring and the summer and the fall. We wait for something to grow and then we eat it." And it's like, she's not, it's like, it's got monster written all over it. It's like, we're just fucking evil. It's like, oh, look at that pretty thing growing. Rip it out of the ground, eat it. You know, like, whatever. And it's like, eat the souls of your children and mold them into you, how you see yourself, you know, and that's what the lottery's about. What are we doing to kids? You know, part of it. And it's like, fuck. Like, I wish I could talk to her now, because it would just be amazing to see how she just looked at the world through a whole different set of glasses.
Oh, so to speak. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's really, I think that quote you mentioned, Bill, about we're afraid of seeing ourselves without the disguise, in terms of, yeah. I think, again, I think there's something very timely about that, because I think that's, in my deeply disturbed, existentially centered mind, whenever I think of people who are going to protest the, you know, shutdowns of things, I can understand some motivation behind that. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, the more things are in an abnormal state, what are the chances you're bumping up against thoughts that contradict sort of the prefabricated life that we all kind of assimilate
right,
to?
Right, right.
You know, then, you know, go to work for 40 hours a week or something, you raise a family, you pay a mortgage, you go buy groceries. When you start to think about greater issues of existence, then it turns into something else, I think, and you're either going to pull more towards it and think about those things, or you're going to try and run away from it, because it's like, oh, that's too much. It's insurmountable, kind of. So I think that's an interesting quote, because I'm like, welcome to my world, where I've been sitting and thinking about matters of existence for like the past 20 years. You know, I've just come to accept the fact that I'm a hamster on a wheel and I'm just trying to play along with this freaking game that everybody else is playing. But, you know, but I digress. Bill, what did you think about, it sounds like you did enjoy the film, Shirley, with Elizabeth Moss. What were some more of your thoughts on that? Because something I thought was interesting was that the movie is not a straightforward biopic. It was actually based off of a novel.
Yeah, it was. I didn't expect it. I thought it would have been a biopic depicting sort of like maybe the last years of her life.
Mm-hmm,
And it's not that at all. It was like, it could be part one of a Shirley Jackson film series that, you know, has 10 sequels.
So the Shirley Jackson extended universe. Yeah.
Yeah, whether you like it or not. It was well done. It was beautiful. It was well crafted. There were certain things I liked about it, certain things I didn't. I think, you know, I had an emotional reaction to it in regard to I expected something a little bit different than what was there. Mm-hmm. But I still really enjoyed it because I like Shirley Jackson, and Elizabeth Moss's portrayal gave me an idea of how she might have been. And so I really appreciated that very much. But so if you want to watch and get more of a taste, more of a flavor of Shirley Jackson, I think this will be it. Because the whole movie opens up with a party scene.
Yes. You know,
at their house. And she's taking like real hard jabs, man, at people, man. And people are like, you know, laughing accordingly. And and they don't know that they're in a fight and she's getting ready to rip their heads off, you know. And it's like, you know, her barbs were out and she was tough, unyielding. Although in some ways she was yielding, and it was, I don't know, but it was great in regards to capturing someone who's been unfortunately overlooked except for one story and one book, you know. And, you know, she had such a large body of work. And you're reading her short stories and you're being wowed by them. I can't wait to get this damn book.
You know what, Bill, I'll pass this volume along to you because I have a volume with Hill House, and we've always lived in the castle, and it actually is the exact same short stories in it. So I'll send you this one when I'm done with it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
But yeah, she just had this thing about her, this push pull effect, but it was more like you had to be wary. Like I could, like if I was walking around her, I would sort of like watch my step, what I said, because I know she'd be able to take something and really like turn it on its head and stab me with my own words, probably.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. Like if I'm going to quote this from We Have Always Lived in a Castle, and I think this says again a lot about, this is just like more evidence about how she writes and approaches things. And this is part of the story, and it goes, "Fate intervened. Some of us that day she led inexplorably through the gates of death. Some of us, and unsuspecting, took unwillingly that one last step to oblivion. Some of us took very little sugar." And it's like, fuck you. It's like, okay, I'm getting scared now because that's it? You talk about the gates of death? You talk about stepping into oblivion? And some of us just took a little less sugar. Like, what's going on? I'm like freaked out. I'm like, is this someone I dated? You know, it's like...
It is, you know, when you isolate the quotes like that, Bill, it does sound very goth poetry in a way.
Totally, totally. And that's a beauty of her writing, too. It's very seamless. It flows beautifully. The transitions are solid. There's no jagged edges. And I think that's even more jarring because you might expect there to be, but it's not. It's not that it's sing-songy or anything like that at all. There's a feminine quality to her writing in regards to, I was trying to think of something Virginia Woolf had said. It's coming from a woman with a bit of an attitude. Like she's letting herself come through in these stories, which I love. But the way it flows so well, you wouldn't expect it to be fear-related, horror-related, or anything like that. And that's part of the deception. Her words are deceiving. It's like, and this is why she probably got tons of hate mail when The Lottery was published in 1948 in The New Yorker. She was getting 10 letters a day. The New Yorker stopped taking phone calls. They were like, why are you publishing this? What the hell is she talking about? Why did she do it? And she was still a little, like, you know, stoic about it. And she didn't come out and, like, give this big explanation. She almost had, like, almost like a fuck you type responses to a degree.
Well, you know, that's interesting, Bill. And I think I like that, you know, because I get sick of, I'm sorry, not to get on my soapbox too much.
Dude, I had a rant before. I'm wondering if I should edit that out or not.
But I think like in our social media obsessed times, you know, there's always fan outcry, fan outrage. It's like release the Snyder Cut or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's just like, and what annoys me is when, you know, is when filmmakers or artists or whatever, they're like, okay, we'll go back and change this, or we'll do this, because, you know, it's usually not. It's not due to like a cheering section. It's more like a demand, I think. So I'm kind of like with Shirley Jackson and just like kind of in a way standing her ground and not making any bones about what she did. You know, it's like the job of the artist is to create art, you know, and if,
yeah,
you know, it's like people are going to like what they're going to like. They're going to hate what they're going to hate, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I can't argue, you know, you're not on the soapbox. I think it's appropriate. And I think this is great. You know, Shirley Jackson is a woman for our times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think she's, you know, I don't know that I can say much about the movie because it kind of took me aback because, oh, when I realized it wasn't really a straightforward biopic, I was kind of, okay, all right. I think I may be in over my head with this because I wasn't sure what was going on most of the time. And I also had a headache, so that didn't help. But
yeah, good.
No, but I thought Elizabeth Moss was fantastic.
I love her.
She's really good at just like disappearing into characters. And, you know, I wonder if they chose her because she was so good on Mad Men, kind of playing a character on there who was kind of, at one time she was trying to like reach for a position, like where the men she was working with were at.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she was also like trying to maintain this sort of status quo thing of, okay, I'm very unfortunate to be in this position that most women aren't. So I felt like she plays those sort of dichotomies really well, like of a character who's like, okay, this is my place versus I'm going to do something that's maybe out of character, but it has to be said or done kind of thing.
I hear that, man.
Yeah. So she was fantastic. Yeah,
she was. And this, I think, is the best quote of her on about her life, about who she is. So if you're like, I like reading horror books, but I don't know if I want to read Shirley Jackson, maybe this will make you do it. She said, and I quote, "I live a mad, abandoned life draped in a shawl and going from garret to garret." And if you don't know what a garret is, that's like a tiny messed up attic. So this is Black Christmas. This is like every freaking horror movie that has an attic in it. Paranormal Activity, all of it. She's there. There is no ghost. It's just Shirley Jackson working on a new story.
That's fantastic,
Bill. Yeah, I love it.
I like that.
But I want to get that biography on her especially. I think I want to get that actually before I read anything else, any of her stories, because, you know, because of her obsession with fear.
Yeah.
But also, and I think this is another one of her great quotes, fear and guilt are sisters.
Mm.
And she didn't say brothers. You know, right? She didn't say friend. I mean, I think that, you know, again, very poignant. She doesn't waste words. And that's one of the beautiful things of her short story, even her novels. It's like every word really counts. And when you write poetry, it has to. When you write a screenplay, it has to. When you write a novel, you think, or even a short story, I got a little wiggle room. But like you said before, no fat. There's no fat. She makes sure that everything counts. And she wrote 200 short stories.
That's amazing. Novels.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, Bill. And you know, those are two, the fear and guilt quote, that those are things that play heavily into, you know, what I've read of her short stories at this point. And I think that's another thing, because I've grappled with especially guilt feelings over various things. So I think anybody who's kind of been in a position where they've done something that they feel really bad about, you know, and possibly the long standing effects of those things. Sometimes it's hard to let that stuff go and tell yourself, you know, you've moved on past that, you've grown past that, or, you know, the hatchet's been buried, but still that stuff remains. And I think she's very good at kind of, you know, it's sort of like digging up the dead, kind of, in a way. You know, it's very much, okay, here's this old pile of bones, we're going to shove them back in your face, kind of, and remind you of these things. And she's very tuned into those emotions, and it's but there is like a distinct feminine quality to the stuff she writes. You know, it's not like like you said, she's not trying to be something she's not in her writing. It feels very much, you know, it's a very distinctive voice, and it's, you know, it's very much not its own thing. It's just, I'm not sitting here, if anything, I'm thinking, well, Stephen King pulled a lot from Shirley Jackson, not like, Shirley Jackson sounds a lot like Stephen King, you know, or Matheson for that matter. So it's just, you know, and that's maybe another thing that makes her work so addicting to read, even though you feel like, it's kind of like that thing, Bill, where, oh my God, what horrors await me in this next story?
Yeah, exactly.
And why am I so excited to just dive in and just throw caution to the wind and read through it, you know, because she is that good, you know?
Yeah. And she's providing, you know, she's looking where other people aren't, like where people are flipping over the same rock. She's in a different area flipping over something else. You know, it's like, what I like about her.
Well, you know, Bill, to go back to The Haunting briefly, the movie, it is not regarded as a masterpiece by everyone.
By me, it is.
No, and I think, you know what, it's a movie I appreciated much more on a second viewing, and yeah, I like it a lot. And now I'm really looking forward to reading the actual novel.
But
you know, I think the thing with The Haunting is it's a very subtle film. And you know, very character driven
atmosphere.
Absolutely, the effect of the door expanding is just it's so subtle, yet it's so impactful.
Oh hell yeah,
yeah. And I just think, and there is that distinct kind of feminine quality with Claire Bloom's character, as kind of the weird, bi-curious psychic, and then you have Julie Harris, who is kind of a manifestation of some of the more neurotic characters that Jackson has written about in her short fiction anyway.
Good old, you know,
yeah, exactly. And you know what, that was something that annoyed me the first time I watched that movie, was, oh my gosh, this character is just so neurotic, I can't take it. And watching it a second time, I was like, oh, this makes total sense now. And it's actually, Nell is a fantastic character, and Julie Harris gave such a fantastic performance in that movie. She is truly haunted, you know, and she's racked with guilt and fear, and I think that's what hit home for me, in addition to all the other stuff about that movie when I watched it the second time. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
But I do. No, I just have my. The movie's so great. You have to see it. It's amazing. I know I've said it before. My friend Vicky Spiegel, she has an original The Haunting poster hanging in her apartment. It's absolutely gorgeous. Nice. She loves the film just as much as we do. I always love it. To me, it has one of the best and most frightening ending scenes in a film. But just to stick with the horror thing, and I don't know if she ever wrote about this particular creature, but she certainly had something to say about it. Shirley Jackson says, "I have often thought that with any luck at all, I could have been born a werewolf, because the two middle fingers on both my hands are the same length, but I have had to be content with what I had." It's like, what the fuck, man? Like, I would say, like, if I, like, was at school and I met her and she said this, I'd be like, do you want to go out on a date? Like, that would be the first thing I would have said.
Bill, you know, the more you quote her, the more I fall in love with her. So
yeah.
It's beautiful. It's just beautiful is what it is.
It's so hard to not love this woman.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just I don't know what to say, because I just feel like we've been gushing this whole show, but I think it's well deserved. I just am. It's been a while, let's say, since I started reading something by an author I've never read before,
mm-hmm.
and just been so completely and utterly taken with the writing. And, you know, Bill, I've told you this many times, I am a slow reader.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very much a stop-start kind of guy, and I do encounter that phenomenon where if I'm reading a novel that's like 400 or 500 pages, I'll sort of flatline in the middle, and it's just like, oh, it becomes like I'm pushing a rock uphill to get through. But with her stuff, it's just, it's like, oh, when am I going to have a chance? When's my next break that I can just sit and read a little bit more of her stuff? It's that good. And that's huge for me. I love that.
No, I'm excited, because I was like concerned about, you know, what the other short stories might hold and all, but now I'm like really, really super intrigued. So,
yeah. So I have the novels to look forward to, and you have the short stories to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if this is from a short story or not, but I figured this would be a good thing to just end on. Just think, like, you know, someone said this. I am going to put death in all their food and watch them die. Really, seriously, can we go out on a date, Shirley? You're awesome.
Fantastic, man. If that is a quote, I don't think it's in one I've read yet. So I maybe have that to look forward to.
No, she was just her wit, man. It's like, her wit was just incredible. She really, really appreciated.
There is a dark sense of humor for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. And that's the beauty. The beauty of her is like, and like I said, it's subtle. It's like, you don't expect this to come at you, especially when you see pictures of her with the horn rimmed glasses,
mm-hmm.
and the hair, and you know, she's getting old and frumpy. She looks sort of like she's getting in a grandma stage. At only 48, I mean, she was aging, you know, fast. But
it's a deceiving look, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's deceptive. You know, you look at her, and you just expect one thing, and then in the writing, you get something completely different. Yeah.
Well, Johnny, that is the perfect segue to this quote, because Shirley Jackson also said, "My dear, how can I make you perceive that there is no danger, but there is nothing but love and understanding?" I don't trust that one bit, man.
No, that's not there's some cruel cosmic punchline to that, I think.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And she'd be the one to expose it, you know, and that'd be great. You know, I think she looked more at the underbelly than a lot of people give her credit for, the underbelly of the United States.
Yeah, Bill, and I mean, going back to like how we started talking about the Twilight Zone, I think there's that timeless quality, and these are, it's like there's a simplicity to these stories that it's just like, these aren't hugely conceptual things. They're really based on, you know, even the Twilight Zone at its most fantastic is really taking just kind of everyday emotions and everyday fears and sort of amplifying them through a different lens. And Shirley Jackson also does that, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's somewhat, you know, I'm actually surprised to say I'm put on edge by her writing, because it takes someone really good to have that effect on me, but she does. And you know, I'm left thinking about these stories after I'm done reading them. So that's also a good thing.
Indeed, man. That's cool.
So, Bill, are there any people you would like to scream to from the castle tonight? Scream out to, that is.
Well, I will, because I've always been in the house. Oh. I've always been here. I'm sorry. Yeah, we're going with Sergeant Scare. Sergeant Scare's on Twitter. That's his handle. I primarily voice horror narrations, but also voice characters in fan films and some animation. He's out of the great state of Louisiana, and you could find him on YouTube. He's cool as hell. Horror art, paranormal photography. Where's that? That's Horror N, as in the letter N, Haunted. On Twitter, horror movie reviews and news, paranormal talk videos. I ran out of liquid. I always do this shit. I'm so sorry, everybody. You know what? I think people just like to hear me screw up. I do spooky photography, posts to inspire creativity, plus just some cheesy humor. He's out of Ohio, which is also a great state, damn it. And he's also on YouTube, so go to his Twitter and check him out. 80s80s MVE Graveyard. What is that? That's the 80s movie Graveyard. Multimedia website with movie reviews, tour reviews, classic trailers, and all the news of what's going on in the world of entertainment. Also, you can follow them at mvegraveyard.com. Eddie J. Morales. Who's that? He's a horror author, damn it. And you can find him at Morales_EJ, horror author of Dreaded Tales, a short horror story collection, paranormal, slasher, supernatural, zombies. And he's out of Florida. And you could also go to eddiejosemorales.com for more about his books and other works. Rob Elo, you could find him as ELO_Rob. Friendly but shy. Uh-oh, does this sound like Shirley Jackson? Enjoys life and helping others. Loves horror movies. Animal lover. Vegan. And he's engaged to Dauntle 554 Eva. She's also cool. They're out of Staten Island, damn it. So that's great. Monster Mash Ken. Monster Mash Ken. Yeah. What can I say about him? Great, great soul. Producer, co-host of East Coast Nation podcast and Where the Scary Things Are horror cast. So you could, they're connected with the ECN podcast, Scary Things Pod. He's a diehard Raiders fan. Horror, Star Wars, wrestling. He's also from the great state, the awesome state of New Jersey, where I'm from. Hopefully when this COVID shit's over, we can get together. And you can find out more about him at wherethescarythingsare.com. Possessed Radio, brand new, this sort of brand new, you know, podcast. Yeah. Very cool souls. Find them on Twitter at possessed_radio. A podcast and YouTube channel focused on horror stories and creepypasta. I paused my interview, focused show on indie horror for now. So that's what he's doing. And you could go to possessedradio.com. Strange Society Network. This is Strange Pod Net. Guess what? We're part of it. Or at least Crash Palaces and whatever. And it's the source for strange podcasts. So besides us, you'll find Misery Bread, Our True Crime Pod, Harrison Smith 85, Horror Daddy. Horror Daddies Are Us. Scary Horror Cast, and also Carnival Horror, and that is under Horror Carnival. All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. No, that's not Shirley Jackson. That's Edgar Allan Poe. You know it because you love the band Tool. Horror fan. That's just me. I'm just being a jerk. Horror fantasy surrealism, which is what we're living through right now. Yes, horror art, yeah. Horror movies, Hammer films, sci-fi, and art. Another great soul. And last but not least, another horror author who's been generous throughout the years, the great Isaac R. Thorne with an E at the end, horror author, HWA member, that's the Horror Writers Association. His stuff is on Amazon. He's also a part of Scream Radio, SCRM Radio, by the great Tracy_TR. And he's host of TNR News, where reviewer RTs are not necessarily endorsements. He says that, but he loves us. I know he does. And he's out of Franklin, Tennessee. And you can find out more at Isaac Thorne, again with that E.com. So those are the stream ads.
Yeah, I was going to say, Isaac's great, and I wanted to mention him myself because he's just very, he religiously downloads our shows, and he tweets about how he's listening to us every Monday morning or every other Monday morning, and I'm like, that makes me feel all nice inside, so, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Paul J. Williams and Randy S. Braska are the other two who've listened to every show. I know Vicky Spiegel listens as well.
Kim McDonald
too.
Horror Pixie, yeah.
Kim, we have to have you on the show to talk about Southern Fried Horror. Or you could interview her, whatever you want to do, Johnny. Get that going, huh?
Yeah, we'll do that.
All right, awesome. So
where can people find you, Bill?
Right here. And CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show, as well as wonderful articles, usually written by the great Johnny Numb himself.
I'm also no Shirley Jackson, but yeah.
Yeah, she didn't have a beard. that was just sick.
Thank goodness, yeah.
I know. You could also find me on Twitter at Crash Palace, and also on Twitter as Noir Kink, where links to my books on Amazon, which are erotic horror thrillers, with a new one coming out soon.
Yes, and they're all excellent. So
that checks in the mail, Johnny. Thank you. What about you?
I do what I can. You can find me at Crash Palace, like Billy said, and you can also find my writing at 1428elm.com, and you can find me on social media on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. But there are bees in those nums, even though they're silent.
That's good, man.
Switching it up after all these years.
Yeah. Wow, man. That's great. So that's it. So read some Shirley Jackson.
And if you've already read some Shirley Jackson, let us know your thoughts on Shirley Jackson and her writing. I'm very curious to hear what other people think about her stuff.
Yeah, and watch Robert Wise's film from 1960, The Haunting, which is based on The Haunting of Hill House. It's really phenomenal. It's one of the best horror films ever made.
Yeah, and actually, since we've been talking about it, I want to watch it again, but I want to read the book. I want to read the book first. So
I want Criterion to come out.
Yeah, it's kind of overdue for a nicer edition than it has. Yeah.
In fact, the DVD that I have, it went bad.
Ooh.
Right near my favorite part in the entire film, near the end. I'm like, ugh, and it just stopped. I'm like, what the hell?
I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah, I used it as a frisbee after that.
Okay, well, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas then, Bill. Okay.
A vaccine?
Well, okay. I'll get you that after I get you a replacement disc for The Haunting. Yeah.
All right. Okay, that's cool. All right, man. Thanks, Johnny.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Have a good one.
You too. Right,
bye. Bye.